Welcome to the Med Device Cyber Podcast, the podcast that dives into the critical world of medical device cybersecurity. I'm your host, Christian Espinoza, joined by my colleague, Trevor Slattery. Each week, we explore the latest trends, share expert insights, and discuss real-life stories that highlight the importance of protecting the devices we trust with our health. Whether you're a manufacturer, regulatory affairs professional, or a concerned loved one, this podcast is for you. Let's get started.
We are back with episode 2 of the podcast. Hey, Christian, how are you doing today?
I'm doing awesome. It's a great day today. I'm looking outside at the lake. It's beautiful. What are we covering today in this podcast, Trevor?
All right. Today, we're going to be looking at some of the types of medical devices and then how medical devices get exploited. So a little bit more of what's happening inside the device for an exploitation and then some of what can be applicable to different medical devices, some of the concerns around different types of devices that we see fielded in the market and sort of the final outcome, what happens in the case of successful exploitation.
Awesome. There are a lot of different types of medical devices. And before I got into this field, I've been in this field since 2015, I hadn't really thought about medical devices too much. I don't think many people really think about medical devices until you need one. And if it's not available or it's been compromised, then it could cause obviously effect to your health or even death potentially. Like one of the first devices we worked on in 2015 was an IVD device or an in vitro diagnostics device. And this is a device that took a sample of your blood, determined what was wrong with the blood, like if you had a specific bacteria, if you had sepsis, and then recommended a course of action or course of treatment, like a specific type of antibiotic. And what's interesting about in vitro diagnostics, if the integrity of the analysis is altered, it can result in a false treatment. So if somebody has sepsis and the device fails to say they have sepsis, it gives a false result, that patient can die. And I didn't really understand that until I actually got into medical devices and the cybersecurity space of that. What are some other devices that you know of, Trevor?
So it's such a wide field. There are estimated to be around 2 million different medical devices out in the field right now, which covers a pretty wide range. One that we're seeing as a pretty popular trend is software as a medical device. So there's been a really big trend coming in with AI in just about every industry. You always see AI as kind of the new big thing for anything you can think of. But it has a lot of application in medical devices as well. A very popular use for AI that we see is image enhancement or sort of refining of an image or something out of a data store, getting a little bit more clarity. Kind of in a recent example that we've seen is an X-ray imaging enhancement software that takes in an X-ray out of a medical device kind of data system. Enhances it in the event that something went wrong with the X-ray, if there was a low radiation dose or someone got a bad angle when they were trying to record it, and then it creates a more accurate portrayal of what's actually behind the X-ray instead of needing to go back and redo the entire process, or sometimes it might not even be possible to redo the process. If you're trying to diagnose a problem quickly, you don't really want to have much delay and you don't want to have to go all the way back through the radiology ward.
Yeah, and basically we're looking at, out of those 2 million devices, any device as a software component needs cybersecurity. And that could even be the firmware on the device. And one of the devices that, I don't know if AI is involved with this device because you're talking about AI, but one of the devices that kind of freaks me out a little bit are surgical robots. Right now, the robots are used to assist a surgeon, but in the near term, probably the next 2 years, those devices are going to be able to perform surgery by themselves. So imagine a surgical robot working on your spine, repairing something with your spine, like by itself without any human interaction. And if this device is compromised, obviously there could be some severe risk. And the same thing with telesurgery. A lot of these robots are operated remotely. So a physician or a surgeon here in the United States, for instance, could perform surgery in Zimbabwe if they wanted to. But if that connection between the surgeon and the robot in Zimbabwe is compromised, and there's delays, then the treatment that the robot is administering or the surgery could be catastrophic, actually. So surgical robots are a real big one. We've worked with quite a few of those. What other devices are there that are some of the top devices that have cybersecurity challenges?
So the definition of a cyber device, like you said, is really, really wide. It can be just about anything with a computer involved. We see a lot of diagnosis tools. So that could be like a little device that's performing an X-ray scan or, outputting some sort of Doppler radiation to try to perform some diagnosis. We see a lot of analysis tools, something that will pull in cardiogram information and perform analysis, send out alerts if needed. Continuous monitoring systems, so like a continuous glucose monitor might be a good example of that, or an ECG monitor. Anything with a computer attached is going to fall under the lens of a cyber device.
And all those need to be secure, and the FDA requires it, and the equivalent in Europe requires it before these devices can even be sold on the market. But one of the challenges I think we have today is there's a lot of, you know, legacy devices that were put on the market and have some sort of vulnerability before the regulators, such as the FDA, even had any cybersecurity regulations. And those devices have a lot of challenges as well, kind of like the ones that were running Windows IoT and the WannaCry affected them.
That's definitely a really big problem, is a lot of devices just left out into the wild. The most recent guidance for the FDA as far as securing cyber devices came out in September of 2023. And there's been a massive industry-wide push in the United States, in Europe, in most countries that are taking a big push for cybersecurity and really understanding the impact, especially in the medical sector. And these devices that haven't gone through the rigorous screening process that's enforced at this point, they can be hard to control. And sometimes the risk landscape isn't necessarily known very well, since part of the initial submission process for any of these devices is to understand what the threat landscape is, do threat modeling exercises, know what could happen, test to see if it can actually happen, and fix it based on that. None of this would happen.
So I hear that term, sorry to interrupt you, I hear that term threat model a lot in our industry, and some of our listeners have probably heard of that term, but what does that actually mean? I think there's a lot of confusion around what a threat model is.
So a threat model is trying to ask what can happen to a device. We're essentially looking at the worst case scenario and trying to figure out what the outcome of it is. So MITRE produces this great playbook. It's called the Threat Modeling Playbook for Medical Devices. And it asks four major questions. So it asks, what are we working on? What can we do to it? What are we going to do about it? Or not what can we do to it, but what can go wrong? What are we going to do about it? And did we do a good enough job? So we're trying to figure out what the device is, what the scope of that device is, anything coming in and out, data flows, data stores, who are the users, just basic information. And then we're going to try to figure out how we can abuse each of these areas. How are we going to abuse the user? How are we going to abuse a data flow? How are we going to abuse this interface, this connection? Can we try to modify data here? Can we change the outcome of a result? And then the third question, what are we going to do about it, is essentially verification and mitigation. We go in and we test for things. So let's say one of our big concerns is that you can get access to a database containing social security numbers and modify them. Then that's where we come in to go do pen testing exercises on the device, see if we can actually get into that database. And if we can, then sure enough, we have to go into a mitigation. If we can't, current mitigations are already going to be sufficient. But the final step is, did we do a good enough job? Sort of making sure that we've covered everything. You go back, review the process, start from the ground up, make sure that you weren't missing any attack vectors and that your attack vectors properly applied to any threats that you could come up with.
Yeah, sounds like you know quite a bit about threat modeling. We could probably do a whole episode on that in the future, dive a little bit deeper.
Oh, yeah.
So you think these, would you consider yourself a white hat hacker then, Trevor?
Yeah, there's a lot of kind of stigma against the term hacker, and having just left Black Hat, I have all sorts of different stickers and goodies, like this one right here that, you know, kind of bashing on hackers. And
what did it say? I couldn't see it.
Well, I'm not sure if I should say exactly what it says, but there's a little glimpse of what the sticker's saying.
Oh, okay.
There's a lot of kind of stigma against the term hacker. People typically think of the bad guy, you know, sitting in some windowless apartment in Russia trying to steal your social security number and your credit cards. But the white hat hacker, like a good guy, is trying to do effectively the same thing as them, but for the right reasons. So we're making sure that we maintain, you know, top ethical standards. Anytime we're trying to hack into a device, we're maintaining strict confidentiality, anything that we find in the device. And we're working with the manufacturers to make sure that they're putting safer products out onto the market. And we're reducing the threat landscape for the bad guys out in the wild.
So we use the same tactics, tools, or procedures, or TTPs as the bad guys.
Yep, and that's a really important thing to make sure that we're using the same tactics, tools, and procedures. They're learning fast, and so we have to learn faster. As soon as they're learning a new attack, we have to learn it better than they do and make sure that we're covering anything that they're going to be able to do.
Awesome. And then we talked a lot about these devices so far, and there's a couple like ways that exploits kind of propagate. One of them is non-directed attacks, I like to say. The other one is directed attacks. In your experience, which one's more prevalent against medical devices?
Well, typically, I would say that we're seeing a lot of non-directed attacks against devices that are running an operating system and hooked up to the internet. There often aren't going to be the same security considerations with anti-malware, antivirus on a medical device as with just a desktop computer, even though there 100% should be these same considerations. A lot of the same attacks that can apply to a computer that are mitigated by design can apply to a medical device without those same mitigations, and they can be sort of fired off at random. This can come in a couple of different ways. The first could be a virus, like a worm, that just tries to proliferate and spread through a network. An example of that is the WannaCry bug from 2017. That would just non-discriminately attack Windows computers anytime it got into a network, and it would spread as fast as it could to try to lock up as much as it could find. Now, another example of sort of a non-directed attack might be something like a misconfiguration in a network environment. Like Active Directory is used by about 98% of Fortune 500 companies. If that Active Directory is compromised, then you can spread changes to any connected device, and that includes the medical devices. So that is, in a sense, sort of a non-discriminate attack. Someone's trying to give themselves access everywhere. They're spreading it throughout the entire network, and these medical devices are affected as a result. The alternative to that would be the directed attack, where someone is trying to pick a specific target and sort of go down the front door to get through it. This can be if there is a specific vulnerability in a component in that device, or if there's a vulnerability in the device itself. Maybe a severe misconfiguration where someone's able to just walk in the door. I can't count how many times I've been testing a device and the password is just password 123, something of that nature, where someone's able to just pick a specific target and go straight for it.
Yeah. And I think even like the Dick Cheney scenario, that would be a directed attack, like a terrorist or state sponsored actor that wanted to take out our vice president at the time were directing their effort to a specific target. And his pacemaker was vulnerable, as we talked about in other episodes, to someone wirelessly connecting to it and shocking him to death. So he had his pacemaker removed. And there's a good video he recorded about that on ABC News, actually, talking about his fear and why he had it removed. That movie, I think it's called Vice, is actually pretty good, too. I think Christian Bale played in that movie. Did you see that movie?
No, I haven't. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it's a good movie. Christian Bale is he's one of my favorite actors, actually. Not because he has the same name as me, Christian, but he's actually a pretty good actor.
Well, it's kind of interesting that, you know, he had all of these concerns about the exploitation of the device. That was sort of a while ago before cybersecurity started to become I guess, in the main public eye as much. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, I think that was in 2013 or so he had it removed. I forgot the exact date. Maybe before then. Yeah, I think it was 2013. But yeah, that was before this stuff really became in the limelight. I mean, cybersecurity, now you hear it on the news every day, like just when we think there can't be a bigger data breach, there's a bigger one that comes out the next day and then in the news. So I think people are finally starting to understand the ramifications. And one of the things that about medical devices is these are physical instruments, physical devices. A lot of traditional cybersecurity is against devices that don't have a physical component. So these are like cyber physical systems, or CPS, as some people like to call. And that to me is why these are more important, because the risk is much, you know, greater. If somebody hacks a device, it could kill somebody. And here in Phoenix, and I don't know if you've taken, I think you have, Trevor, you've taken a Waymo before. That's another example of it's an autonomous driving car. I kind of group that into with medical devices, because a physical device has a cyber component that if you can hack the cyber component, you could cause great harm, just like with a surgical robot. Because with a autonomous car, if you hack into it and you know I'm a person in the car, then you could maybe cause a car to speed up to 150 miles an hour and hit a light pole or telephone pole and, you know, probably kill me. So it's kind of scary when you actually like pull back the covers a little bit and look at the medical devices and things like autonomous robots, surgical robots are coming up pretty soon.
I think another interesting point on the physical device is how different the actual exploitation is there. I was recently at Black Hat in Las Vegas, and the entire focus was sort of just the virtual network up in the cloud and not the actual physical interfaces. I can count on one hand the amount of talks or booths that I saw about a physical interface. And it's just not as well known, even by cybersecurity professionals, what the landscape is and the threat landscape against a physical interface or a physical device. As soon as you're opening up new data connections that a lot of pen testers and a lot of security professionals might not be as experienced with, they might not necessarily be aware what the risk, and that's their entire industry, which is kind of an interesting thought.
Yeah. And like we talked about, some of the outcomes from hacking into a physical interface or a medical device could be pretty grave. Like we could have a misdiagnosis with an in vitro diagnostic system. And what's interesting about one of those I worked on before, it wasn't just used in healthcare. It was also used in industry, as they like to say, where the same device that I talked about earlier at this episode that was used to diagnose blood for things like sepsis or the bacteria, it was also used in the hamburger supply chain. So people took a sample of hamburger that came from a manufacturer, ran it through this device, and it would tell you if the hamburger had E. coli or salmonella or any other bacteria in it. And this device has some vulnerabilities. So I always thought, because I did a lot of work in the Department of Defense, of these scenarios where if somebody really wanted to cause havoc, they could hack this device, taint the hamburger supply chain, and then have the device test negative, even though it was actually positive for E. coli and salmonella, and then have this hamburger released to the supply chain like McDonald's and Wendy's and all these fast food places, and actually kill a bunch of infants and elderly people because they're, you know, more prone to having a reaction to salmonella or E. coli. So this is like a little bit bigger challenge than just with medical devices alone, because some of these things I think are used in other purposes for diagnosis.
And that widespread impact can be pretty, it's hard to get the scale sometimes. I remember pretty recently, I believe it was Chipotle had actually that exact scenario come up where they missed a supply of tainted meat and a whole bunch of people were getting sick from it. And it was a big lawsuit going on. So there are sort of two things to think about there as far as the impact goes. The first, of course, is the impact to whoever went to Chipotle and got really sick because of it. Some of them might have had to go to the hospital, you know, an infant or an older person might have had a pretty hard time with it. And then the other impact is the damage to Chipotle. So organizations have to be aware of the perception of public image and, of course, any liability in the event of a massive cybersecurity incident. It's not an isolated problem. It's widespread, prolific throughout the entire supply chain, start to finish.
Yeah, awesome. I think we covered quite a bit of some of the vulnerabilities with medical devices and the types of medical devices and why cybersecurity matters. Do you think there's anything else we should add to this episode?
Yeah, I think one other big thing, kind of we had been touching up on confidentiality, integrity, and availability in another episode. But one thing that we'd briefly talked about, data breaches that happen all the time. We see a data breach just recently. What was that? 2 weeks ago, everyone's social security number got breached. And
another time, mine's been stolen like 8,000 times at this point.
Oh yeah. At a certain point, it just kind of flies right over. You go, oh, again? Oh, well. But when we're looking at some of the regulations, you know, HIPAA protections in the US are obviously the big one. And medical devices, we're increasingly seeing more and more sort of virtual bookkeeping, in a sense, where you don't have a physical copy of patient records anymore. Everything is virtual, stored in a DICOM server, up in the cloud somewhere. And that's another part of the really big impact, is sensitive information for medical uses is extremely sensitive. And the breach of that, especially widespread breach, can cause massive, massive downstream problems. And if someone knows another person's patient records, that opens up that individual to a ton of different attacks with social engineering problems. And of course, just the embarrassment factor of having your personal information leaked. So the impact can be really widespread. And I think it's important to really understand the full lens there.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because I know for a while there, and it's probably still ongoing, various celebrities were getting diagnosis of things, and that diagnosis was being leaked, which in some cases was embarrassing to the celebrity.
Yeah, that's sort of just the perfect example. You know, personally, I don't think that I'd want everyone to know exactly any medical issue that I've ever had. And most people feel the exact same way. And especially if you're in, you know, the public light, you want to have at least some part of privacy in your life. And so having that get disclosed definitely could cause a lot of headache.
Awesome. I think we'll wrap up the episode here. So thanks for tuning in to this episode. And on the next episode, we're going to go over some of the regulatory landscape requirements for medical device cybersecurity. There's been a lot of changes relatively recently with the FDA. And we're going to touch upon that and how the industry as a whole is making a big effort to reduce the cybersecurity risk with medical devices.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Med Device Cyber Podcast. We hope you gained valuable insights into the world of medical device cybersecurity. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast on your favorite platform. Should cybersecurity be top of mind for your medical device company and you wish to learn more about how Blue Goat Cyber can help your business, please click on the link in the show notes below to book a discovery call with our team. Stay informed and empowered to protect yourself and the people your company serves. Until next time, stay safe and secure.